It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I want you to be my coach.
Luca Guadagnino's Challenger is nothing short of miraculous.
I'm taking such good care of my little white boys.
It's an utterly magical experience. I like it.
Decimate that little bitch.
Zendaya mesmerizes like nothing she's previously done.
You're not a member of my fan club?
It will leave you breathless. Do not miss this movie. I like it. Challengers.
Good night.
Are only in theaters Friday.
Da, 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious?
It's showtime.
All right, we are here to talk one of the most anticipated movies. At least I know for our VIPs. Because they can't stop talking about this one, couldn't before it came out. And they're still talking about it as I'm talking about it right now. It's Challengers with Zendaya, Mike Faist, and Jack O'Connor. This one comes to us courtesy of the IMAX format. Richard, how was your theater experience with this one, first off?
I wanted to check it out in IMAX. I have an IMAX very close by, but I could not make the time's worth. And before seeing it, hearing that it was an IMAX was confusing to me because it did not seem, you know, everything about this, peculiar release in a good way. I think a lot of it's really cool. But, you know, Luca Guadagnino, or hopefully I'm saying that okay, Guadagnino, or however, great filmmaker, has made some really cool stuff. Not someone I really think of as IMAX adjace, as someone who's making sort of, while his movies are often very visually interesting, something that lends itself to like giant screens. It's kind of a different thing. Theme park cinemas, as it were. I don't think of him as a director in that world. So I was kind of curious about it and just how big this was pushed. I remember seeing the trailer for it a year ago. And I was like, that'll be a cool little art movie at the end of the year. And Zendaya doing cool stuff. And then, it ended up being this really big release. I mean, she, I think, is one of very few people that moves tickets in this day and age. So it's not a bad strategy, and this did pretty well at the box office. And I think all the virality of everything really helped with it. But when I went and saw it though, there was more to it that visually that I think would have been cool on IMAX. And I was kind of thinking, actually this might have worked well. I'm glad they did an IMAX version. Good use of the IMAX. You can only show Top Gun 2 so many times. But yeah, it made sense once I saw it that it had an IMAX release, and I'm glad I got the funding to do so.
I'm actually surprised this didn't make more money. I mean, it made $15 million opening weekend. There's literally nothing else out. Second place was the re-release of Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
And then Civil War was out in its 18th day. So basically week 4 of Civil War. I'm surprised it didn't make more because my theater was pretty packed. Like as packed as it was for Godzilla v. Kong or, you know, some of the other movies we've seen recently. And so I thought it would have had a bigger total gross. But I mean, it is a tennis movie. I mean, tennis isn't the biggest sport there is, especially when it comes to movies. There aren't a lot of tennis movies in the zeitgeist that you probably grew up on and can relate to. So, you know, it is kind of a hard sell other than the cast, which was the sell for this one. You know, the trailer, all of the lead up to it, the delay. There was a lot of anticipation for what this was going to be. How far was this going to go? Because the teaser trailer, I probably should say, did exactly that. It teased and teased. And, you know, it's not one you want to take your kids to. If they are fans of Zendaya's work and Dune and Spider-Man, whatever. But, she is quite a force as an actress. I mean, there's a lot of...
She's also 27. It's funny to me. Everyone's like, she this is not your child Zendaya. It's like, she's 27. She's not 18 doing her first. It's okay if she does adult themed material. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's funny that that was a storyline. It's like, she'll be 30 in the next couple of years. I think it's okay if she expresses
it's because we grew adult up feelings. With them. Yeah. I mean,
no, for sure.
Yeah. They say that about like Taylor Swift and her themes. It's like, she's in her mid to late 30s. I mean, come on, guys. So
it's funny. It's like the people arguing infantilize these people are in by nature treating them like infants, you know, just by having the argument.
Exactly. Where do you fall on Luca Guadagnino? He is one of the top Lucas going right now. Mm-hmm. So I will say that. Not the top, but one of the top Lucas. I think he's a pretty interesting guy. It seems like he's got a definite style, you know, kind of this auteur thing going. I mean, this was a highly stylized film for what it was. And to answer your question about why this was IMAX, I think that's just the new sell now, the new upcharge. Instead of 3D, it's just going to be IMAX. So anything that they can say, oh, can you shoot that full frame and we'll get that extra IMAX money, they're going to do it. And I thought this lent itself in parts good to the IMAX format, and in other parts, I'm like, why is this in IMAX? We don't need to be doing this in the full thing. But I mean, the commitment to it was certainly there. It looked great. Where do you fall on Luca, though?
Yeah, he's a really interesting director. I think he's making, I wouldn't say necessarily innovative films, but his movies are live in both the world of kind of high art, you know, these in sensual, sexual kind of adult stories, but are also, I think, pretty approachable and appealing. Part of that's with who he casts, right? He's casting these, what is left of monoculture movie stars want to work with him. Your Chalamets, your Zendayas, your Army Hammers in the moment. I don't think he ever, even before
Canada. I mean, I credit him with full on bringing Chalamet to the public. I mean, Chalamet had done a ton of stuff, but I mean, he made him a star basically.
Yeah, he really did. And writes those kind of characters that actors really, you know, really want to work with him, and works in a way that's working with him. So, and he's pretty prolific. I mean, think about it. I mean, he's had like 5 movies in the last 8 or 9 years. That's pretty crazy. He hasn't from director. He's got 2 this year, cause he's doing the William S. Burroughs movie, with Daniel Craig later this year, which I think will be his kind of Oscar movie of the year. Watch out for that one in terms of award season. But yeah, I mean, he's a really, I think, a pretty cool director who has a real sense of style. Definitely works in the, you know, as everything becomes so Americanized and Anglicized a bit with the sensibilities of like corporate film culture. Yeah,
the blockbusterness.
He's a real like European. And when I say European, I mean like continental European artistic voice. And I think that definitely has a place, you know. I think that's a cool thing to have. You know, not everything needs to be like that, but I do like that still exists in the world of entertainment, because that's there's a legacy of that type of filmmaking that goes back a long ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool to see people like him have success. I mean, you know, it goes back to, you know, the European filmmakers of the early 20th century, you know, kind of setting the stone. I mean, his style is very reminiscent of you know, a Truffaut or he cites Godard as one of his, Jean-Luc Godard as one of his main influences. So, I mean, he comes from the school of European cinema, it seems, that new wave kind of style, and he's carrying the torch, and it's a torch that needs to be carried in a world of blockbuster cinema. I think these movies are important aesthetically, if not, you know, subject matter wise. They're certainly important subject matter wise, but I think like just how he directs and how he sees, how he puts symbols, the frames in his mind is super unique and important. And this certainly had an artistic flair. I mean, it felt a little bit Social Network-y to me, but I mean, that's probably mainly because of the music, but it had a very serious tone like that, where this is a serious business these people are in. It might be like a joke to some people, like social media. Oh, you work at Facebook? That sounds like a lot of fun. You know, like you hear about that. Or, oh, you're a pro athlete? Oh, that sounds like, you know, just a blast. And it's actually just pretty grueling. So I thought in that sense, it was similar to that. But also, the ensemble cast. I mean, Social Network had quite an ensemble cast, too. How it kind of cuts between the storylines. What did you think of this cast, by the way? The three main stars. We talked about Zendaya, but the other two guys.
I guess. Yeah, they were great. I mean, I had seen... obviously, we had talked about Faced with West Side Story and how much he really stole a lot of that movie and how sort of charismatic and intriguing he was. Josh O'Connor, I was less familiar with. I know he's Prince Charles, right, on The Crown, and got some Peaky Blinders or something in the past. But wasn't as familiar with him, but I thought they did a great job. I mean, it really is a three-piece lead. Even though Zendaya is definitely, as she is with most people, the biggest name in it. But she's really crafting out a pretty interesting career, I think, is in a lot of ways, right? I mean, she's doing a large variety of different stuff. And I think she seems really smart and purposeful about that. And I always think that's a really good anecdote to, like, the celebrity culture that she's kind of forced into with, you know, like, who she's dating and things like that. I think she's really crafted herself into a really... In addition to being a great star, a really interesting actress, and that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, my wife and I went and saw this, and we were talking about some of the big names in movie stardom, and Sydney Sweeney's name came up, and we both agreed that Zendaya can act circles around Sydney Sweeney. So it's just because you get the job and can get the roles even doesn't mean you have like the juice. Right. In this day and age, and Zendaya has the juice. I mean, I could see her winning some, you know, acting awards in her future.
Yeah, she produced
and you can't
this
say that for
too.
Every actor. I mean, every dude actor is the same way. I mean, there's plenty of handsome faces that can't read, you know, that can't emote. Zendaya can do all those things.
Yeah, she's enormously talented and all of that, but she's, I think, becoming a really young power broker in that industry as well. I mean, you know, she produced this. She's got other things she's doing as well. It seems like she's kind of leveraged. You know, it's crazy to think, like, she'd not really been in anything until Homecoming in terms of film. She did a lot of television. Obviously, she kind of started as a singer and things like that.
And she has Michi.
But Michi was after that. Michi was... Smallfoot, right? Was that? That's 2018. So like Lemonade and then Spider-Man Homecoming are her first couple things. There's not a whole lot of wasted fat in her filmography is my point. Maybe Michi is the one. But she kind of got right into it with like, you know, Malcolm and Marie, Dunes, you know, a couple Spider-Mans, you know, Challenger. Like she didn't waste a lot of time doing pretty innovative stuff.
Yeah, 100%. I remember her. Like pre-Spider-Man, if you had said who's Zendaya, I remember her music.
I know she's totally, I wouldn't say left that behind permanently, but that's definitely doesn't seem like
she
a
could
focus
be a
burn.
Huge pop star if she just like wanted to flip that switch again. I think she could, you know, be as big as any of these.
But you know what's great is what's cool about her. I don't know. I think she's just really smart. We are in a golden era of female pop stars and not a golden era of great young female movie star actresses. And it's like, it's like she can fill that role way better. So like, I think she's definitely pursuing the right thing right now. I think that rocks.
So about the trailer and the lead up to this, one of the main questions is how far was this thing going to go? You know, how far were they going to push this? Was this going to be like a rated X thing? Was Zendaya going to go towards the you know
the wild
euphoria.
Things of 2020
yeah exactly and I thought it did a pretty good job of just basically being a giant tease the entire movie and might be unpopular opinion but should have been hornier.
and you said
it was
that.
Really horny but it you should have been hornier. I said that about most movies we've talked about this year. Mm-hmm. Godzilla v. Kong.
You said the same thing
way.
About, Dune 2.
Yeah, should have been hornier in Godzilla v. Kong. But yeah, I thought it was kind of tame for what I was expecting. That makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we never know with Luca, too. I mean, this is someone that's really interested in like human sexuality. It seems to be a theme of his films. You know, there is a thing, you know, kind of this move of like, as things have become more commercialized, sex is something that's definitely left cinema and is not a topic anymore. In some ways that's good, because you don't want the like exploitation of young actors and actresses purely for sort of titillation of the audience. But in other ways, it's like there's a lot of interesting pathos and drama that is involved with human sexuality as well, so you don't want to lose those type of narratives. But it is interesting in that, yeah, this does that. It does kind of simultaneously very kind of overtly sexual and interested in the chemistry of these three leads, but never fully goes to the waters that would make any probably be very uncomfortable for a 15-year-old. But any adult sort of Zendaya fan is not going to feel like she's really gone into this edgy part of her career. It's just as a really well-executed kind of, like you said, for lack of a better word, tease.
At the end of the day, I think this tried to be a tennis movie. I mean, it very much...
That's what made the IMAX stuff great. If it had been... I mean, I didn't see it on IMAX, but I was like, the tennis scenes, I was like, this would be cool on IMAX.
Yeah, there were some really cool shots in the movie, some really innovative camera moves. The shot of the camera, like as the actual ball was the camera, was surprisingly not dizzying. Conceptually, if I'd said, oh, the camera is going to be the ball and it's actually going to flip around and stuff, I'd be like, oh. Because they do that in movies before. I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. Big Lebowski, you know, like the camera's the bowling ball and it's going down the lane. Even that's pretty dizzying. This wasn't for some reason. I don't know. They must have worked that out really a lot of times to figure out the best thing that would be the least jarring to the audience and still get their point across. Some cool body cam shots, you know, them playing tennis was cool. So yeah, I thought they thought that part through. It was a really cool story in the fact that this wasn't Wimbledon. And this was just like a side qualifying tournament. And there were stakes, but the stakes weren't. It's not like the World Series or anything, you know. So that was kind of cool. The stakes are more the relationships than the actual tennis.
I agree. And it's tennis is a very cinematic sport. There should be more tennis narratives.
Yeah.
You know, some the sports I like more, you know, we always talk about this, like basketball. I love basketball, but like not, it's not that great. In a drama sense, baseball's way better. That's why baseball movies are all good. Not all good.
But I would rank it as baseball movies are the best, then basketball, then football, then golf.
Yeah, golf's good.
Really good.
Golf's good. There's not enough golf movies.
Hockey. Like,
yeah, golf's got a pretty... Since Slapshot's worked. I don't know if anyone's done it since.
Slapshot's, Mighty Ducks, Miracle. There's some great hockey movies.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, hockey may be sneaky, like a good second place. You're right.
Then there's tennis. Maybe this starts a big wave of tennis movies. I've seen this
in Match Point, and the only things I can think of. Are there others?
Wimbledon with Wimbledon, what, Paul Bettany.
Yeah.
That's the only other one I can think of. I'm sure there's more.
It doesn't technically lend itself great because like the opponents are so far apart from each other. So it's hard to have dialogue between them.
What's that one that Will won the Oscar for?
That who won the Oscar for?
Will Smith.
Oh, I guess you could say King Richard is a tennis movie on some level, sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need the Andre Agassi movie. That's what we all need.
Well, that's a great, best memoir ever.
Set in the 80s. I mean, that would be freaking great. We need it. So what did you think of the soundtrack?
Been listening to it a lot. It's awesome. I mean, if people that may have been listening to this for a long time know Kent and I love Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross and love them inside and outside of scoring films. But that would just put that bias out there. I listen to that all the time when I'm reading and things like that. I did think it was a really crazy choice for this type of movie, and I did think it really worked. I thought it was an awesome score. For the movie itself. It's obviously everything they do is going to be good, I think, in a vacuum. But with the movie itself, I thought it was so sort of abrasive and different. I thought it was really cool and added to the momentum and style of the film.
Yeah. Brian's not here, but he likes to say that you only notice music when it's either really bad or really good. This was the really good side of the equation. I mean, the music... makes the scenes better. I mean, what more can I say? It emphasizes what's going on. It intensifies the emotion. alters the emotion. I mean, it's they're truly one of a kind. Like it's kind of an everything they touch is turns to gold scenario.
Yeah.
And I've got to bet this will be nominated for best original score. I can't imagine.
I would think it wouldn't be. Yeah.
This is as good as anything they've done, if not better.
Yeah, you and I have said my favorite thing they ever did was the Ken Burns score for the Vietnam War.
I love the orchestral stuff, but I think this, yeah, like with the rhythm and the just energy so cool. of it, it's just like, I mean, it's perfect for what this is. And the way that they, in scenes where it's just them, you know, in the bedroom, so to speak, and then in playing tennis, you know, and it's kind of the same kind of backbeat going. I mean, it's a really cool thing. I would love to hear more about how they approach.
You ever listen to the You Were Never Really Here score, the Joaquin Phoenix movie that Johnny Greenwood did?
Yes.
It reminded me a bit of that. It has that kind of propulsive electronic feel to it.
Yeah. I'm glad they don't do a lot, but what they do seems to work. And I thought it was fantastic. It was one of my favorite things about it. So let's talk about the storyline, main storyline of them being these doubles partners who kind of go their separate ways. One of them gets kind of super famous, ends up marrying in some capacity, ends up with Zendaya, and having a kid, all that stuff, while the other one's struggling, but she is kind of more into the other guy a little bit on the side, can't quite detach herself emotionally from that relationship. First of all, what did you think about the unchronological order of this?
I thought, it was non-linear, not confusing at all. The choice about it, I'm not here to discuss that. I mean, it's, you know, it's done a bit now. It's not like an original thing. But it's always, to me, it's like the execution of those. And I thought this one was executed really well. You're always kind of aware of, I don't know, at least I didn't find myself lost at all. I thought it was a cool device for in good execution of said device.
I got a little confused because in one scene, I got confused with the kid, because one scene she didn't have the kid. Like, she had the kid, but then she was going to meet up with Patrick, and she had just like had a kid in the scene before. And I turned to my wife and was like, doesn't she have a kid? What's going on here? And she's like, this is a flashback. I was like, oh, okay. You know, I guess I did actually get confused. Like, 'cause it felt like every scene was either a flash forward or a flashback. So, it both worked for me and confused me. Great typography, the movie.
Yes.
Great titles.
Not just Papyrus, is good.
No, yeah. Not just Papyrus. There was Papyrus.
Yeah, there's some real, I mean, he's, I think, really in his bag as a director. Like, we're definitely getting the peak, kind of a late career peak for him. I mean, he's been around a while.
52.
Which for a director is kind of, I guess, right in the prime, but it's crazy. He's doing like one or two movies a year now. Pretty wild.
I think of the two co-leads, I think Mike Feist is my favorite of the two. I would bet on him over I would bet on Jack O'Connor, but who knows? I don't know what he's got coming up.
I haven't seen enough Feist yet, but he's really magnetic. I mean, he's got the
Bike Riders. He's in the Bike Riders this year. So,
oh, that's summer. True. Yeah. Which I have no idea how to feel about. What do you feel about that coming?
I'm for the idea, but I don't know how much Austin Butler I can do in such a short amount of time. Plus Tom Hardy. I'm a little tough.
Michael Shannon could go a lot of ways too, but Jeff Nichols is such a great filmmaker.
Yeah, he is. I mean, I love that type of movie, the Easy Rider, you know, road movie with, you know, scenic America, all that type of stuff. I mean, I'm all in. I don't know. I think it might be too much. I mean, give me more Mike Feist. Doesn't look like he has anything past this year on his Wikipedia that's coming out. So don't know what's going on there. You need to get some roles booked, Mike. All right. Again, about the storyline, what I did want to say as we close out and talk about the end, how did you interpret the end?
That was the only problem with it. With them charging each other at the net. I'm all for a symbolic ending. That, but that, you know, what I'm talking about is like this kind of European sensibility, non-literal filmmaking that I like. So I say all that to compliment it. And then I can't help but roll my eyes at the end. So in practicality, I guess somewhat I'm a hypocrite. But yeah, interpretation, I don't know. That the fight and the challenge, so to speak, was really the sexual session all along. I don't know. It just seemed kind of like, mm-hmm. we don't know how to end this. We're going to have this big sort of grand operatic ending and then just this collision and then we're done. That was my thought.
Yeah, it did. It seemed operatic. And I thought Zendaya's reaction goes back to the line that she says of, I just want to see good tennis. Like, that's all I want, you know? and then this made for just this incredibly tense moment and match between two people that goes, you know, basically to overtime. And ended up, there's a lot of ways you could read it, but that's just one of them. I like how it abruptly ended too. Cause I think a lot of movies don't know when to get out there. This epilogue kind of thing, just end. Roll credits. Mm-hmm. So it was good. It was really good. Don't know where this will fall on my end of the year list because there's still so much to come, but this was pretty strong.
It's such an end of the year style movie too in a lot of ways. Yeah. Such a bizarre April movie.
Yeah. I wonder why this got delayed.
This isn't a December like Oscar film, but it's like a September, October movie definitely.
Yeah.
I feel like, but.
I could see it getting a screenplay nomination maybe. I thought it was a good screenplay. And great score, great cinematography too. So I would look out for all those things. Maybe Zendaya gets a nomination too. We'll see how.
Yeah, I think it will be a pretty light year. So maybe in some years it wouldn't have gotten, not that it's not deserving, but a movie in April wouldn't get much. But with the strike last year, I think it might be a bit of slim pickings this year in terms of real quality, quantity. And
even
of quality
though
at the top.
I would bet more on Feist in the future, I think O'Connor would get the nod if they were going to get awards on the, he just had the more awardsy part.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, shall we grade?
Let's grade.
I'll give this between a B+ and an A- on it, somewhere on there. Probably, I'll go A-. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going A- too. The score gets it up to an A for me. It's probably a B+.
Yeah, it's visually so cool, and the score is awesome. So, I'll return to it for that, if not nothing else. Okay, there it is. Challengers talk. Join us later this week or on the other feed for movie draft talk because it's that time of year, folks. So place your bets. Bets are open. And get involved. If you're doing the movie draft and VIP, good luck to you as well. So email us for details on that, and we'll see you at the cinema. Bye.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah-yah.